You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
I'm reporting live for WFHB. This is Michael Glab.
And I'm Jonah Chester. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, December 11th, 2017.
It's not just one person up there talking the whole time. We've built partnerships with area professionals. So we bring in a realtor. We bring in a mortgage originator and a home inspector to share those different perspectives.
The city of Bloomington is currently enrolling residents for first-time home buyers courses. WFHB's news director Wes Martin speaks with Housing and Neighborhood Development Director Dan Niederman about the courses held throughout next year. That's coming up on today's feature report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Keith Baube has dedicated over 700 hours to the Monroe County Community Kitchen, and he's helped feed over 3,000 individuals in 2016. Baube joins Bloomington Volunteer Network's Lucy Shake on Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community. But first, your daily headlines.
Democrat and Republican Party chairs will soon be gearing up for next year's elections. Monroe County Clerk Nicole Brown reports parties are legally required to notify her office, in writing, of how state convention delegates will be chosen.
The party chairs have advised that for the Democrats, state convention delegates will be run by the four county council districts, and Republicans have advised that their convention delegates will be selected according to commissioner districts, of which there are three.
Speaking in the December 7th election board meeting, Brown also listed the offices to be elected next year.
United States Senator, United States House Representative for District 9, Secretary of State, State Treasurer, State Auditor, State House Representative for Districts 46, 60, 61, 62, and 65, County Assessor, County Clerk, County Prosecuting Attorney, County Recorder, County Sheriff, County Commission for District 1, County Council seats 1 through 4, Judges seats, this would be seat 2, seat 3, and seat 8. Many times people want to go according to the court, the seat on the bench, but it is actually a separate seat from the division that you are if you are a Monroe County Court Judge. We also have Democrat Precinct Chair and all township trustees and boards, state convention delegates, both Democrat and Republican, Monroe County Community School Corporation School Boards District 1, 3, and 7, Richland Bean Blossom Community School Corporation School Board Districts for Richland and Bean Blossom, the town of Ellettsville, Wards 4 and 5.
Brown says the 2018 ballot will also contain questions about the retention of justices in the Indiana Supreme Court. Board member Carolyn Vandeweel noted a change in how judges will be required to file their financial reports.
But judges actually are supposed to file their financial reports with the county election clerk, not with the state office, and we do have jurisdiction over those reports. That was information given to us by both co-leads of the state election board, so that is a change that people need to be aware of.
Vandeweel says 2017 financial reports for all legislative caucus committees, candidate committees, and political action committees are due next month.
If you have an open account, you will need to file your annual report, whether or not you did any business last year or the year before that. Unless you have disbanded that account, you are required to file an annual report. our clerk's office or voter registration office will send out notice to everybody who is due, so don't ignore it if you get it.
Reports are due Wednesday, January 17th, 2018 at noon. Those with questions should call Election Supervisor Karen Wheeler at 812-335-7219.
The nonprofit community bookstore Boxcar Books is closing its doors permanently at the end of this month. In a statement on its website, the Bloomington-based nonprofit stated increasing rent, the difficulties of maintaining a brick-and-mortar bookstore, and the changing character of downtown as key decisions in the decision to close. According to the website, Boxcar Books rent in 2002 was $350 a month. That has reportedly increased 725% over these past 15 years. The bookstore, which carries self-described radical and revolutionary literature, also doubles as a community center. In a statement, staff and volunteers wrote, quote, "While we ultimately learned how to balance the needs of the bookstore with those of the community center, the strain put on our volunteers during the heightened cleansing of Kirkwood was immense and many left. The extreme pressure we felt from our landlord, the police, and most fiercely our neighbors to make our space off limits to people without homes, combined with our own emotional ability to handle constant crises, made it hard for us to focus on what we love about running a radical collective bookstore," unquote. Boxcar Books shares its house on 6th Street with the Midwest Pages to Prisoners. In a separate statement to WFHB, Pages to Prisoners stated it would be moving into a new location. Quote, "Midwest Pages to Prisoners project is still operating, and our volunteers are currently working on securing a new home for the project after Boxcar Books closes," unquote. Boxcar Books declined to comment for the story.
City Council members took up amendments to the city's draft comprehensive plan in a special session last week. Members continue to keep the issue of affordable housing a priority. Council member Dave Rullo reads from the draft document and his amendment to protect affordable housing in the city's core neighborhoods.
Second paragraph begins, "Local policymakers have affirmed affordable housing as a major focus area of the city's administration, while the City Council formed the Affordable Living Committee to specifically address the challenge. Increasing housing supply, along with offering a range of housing programs for extremely low-income households through workforce households with up to 120% of annual median income, will help ensure accessible mixed-income neighborhoods." Then we add, "Bloomington's older, urban, small-scale, compact, single-family housing located primarily around the city center and university provides some of the city's most affordable housing stock and more affordable housing stock and must be protected."
Rollo says the amendment also acknowledges the need for mixed housing developments to accommodate growth. He says he's working to balance the need for long-term affordability without imposing it. Rollo says imposed affordability is a concern to residents who fear their property values will depreciate over time instead of appreciating.
Clearly, housing prices do go up, and people, you know, obviously benefit from that. But the scale and the size are what to concentrate on in terms of its long-term affordability.
Councilmember Chris Sturbaum voiced his support for Rollo's amendment, which passed unanimously.
You know, one of the new urban concepts is that buildings and houses age into affordability. And you get out new housing stock, they age, they get older, and they do simply get more affordable. You know, we have to help people sometimes when the houses are starting to decay, and the city's long had programs to help people stay in these houses. And the scale of these houses, something happened in our neighborhood. People are always wanting to invest in the neighborhood, and there were a couple of little houses. I won't call them shacks, but they're small, two- or three-room houses, and they're side by side on a single lot. And someone wanted to buy those and put something new in, and he couldn't because of the protection in the historic neighborhood. And what happened is two very affordable rentals remained because of that, not tearing down what are by no means beautiful houses, but they're little livable homes, and they're valuable. And it's interesting that without recognizing that, you know, we're going to see growth and progress, but we're not going to see affordability.
Councilmember Isabel Piedmont-Smith says the draft comprehensive plan as a whole is being amended to make it more user-friendly. Piedmont-Smith says chapters of the draft document are now aligned with objectives found in the city's vision statement. Piedmont-Smith initiated this change.
Let's say you were part of the visioning process, and you say, well, I remember we said, you know, we want to encourage bicycle and pedestrian transportation. And you go to the transportation section, and you can see exactly, oh, that was objective number 7. This is an example. And it's in there. It reflects back to the visioning document. So it makes it a more user-friendly document. It makes it a more transparent document that we're doing what we said we would do.
The City Council will continue its review of amendments to the Draft Comprehensive Master Plan in January. The draft document is available online at the city's website, bloomington.in.gov.
The City of Bloomington and Monroe County are expected to join a lawsuit against opioid producers and their affiliates. In a press release issued this afternoon, the city and county governments are expected to announce their legal action on Wednesday morning. City of Bloomington spokesperson Mary Catherine Carmichael says the lawsuit reflects local government's belief that the burden of the opioid epidemic shouldn't be shouldered by citizens alone.
Well, there would be damages requested. So the answer to your question is we feel strongly that taxpayers shouldn't be left to shoulder the burden of solving a problem fueled by the opioid manufacturers and distributors. So we're looking to hold the drug manufacturers and distributors accountable.
Carmichael says the city and county have mutually shared interests when it comes to the ongoing opioid epidemic.
The city and county commissioners have joined forces. We agree that this is a real serious problem in our community, and both entities are looking at absolutely every avenue they can and addressing the issue from many different fronts, and this is one of those fronts. So we have joined a lawsuit against opioid manufacturers, and more information, details, et cetera, will be provided on Wednesday morning.
Carmichael did not say who would provide the funding for the legal costs. The press conference on Wednesday morning will include an open question period.
The Indiana Department of Natural Resources is highlighting its environmental stewardship in a public relations effort to help the organization's image. The move comes after the DNR's Division of Forestry sold 299 acres of old-growth Yellowwood State Forest to a logging company. In a press release on the DNR's website, the state organization points to its history of conservation in Indiana. The press release states nearly 160,000 acres of abandoned farmland and forest have been converted into forests in Indiana, including the Yellowwood State Forest's backcountry. The Indiana DNR's Division of Forestry states their practices and research of periodic and calculated removal of single trees that are sick or dead allow for the thriving of other plants and animals. The DNR also stated that at-risk animals, such as the timber rattlesnake, hooded warbler, worm-eating warbler, and Indiana bat, have benefited from timber harvests in certain areas. The logging of 299 acres of Yellowwood's backcountry is thought by many experts to further endanger at-risk animal populations. Late last month, more than 200 scientists and academics presented a letter to Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb objecting to the logging of the Yellowwood backcountry area.
The Bloomington Commission of Hispanic and Latino Affairs is reaching out to immigrant communities in the city. City Council members heard from Chair of the Bloomington Commission on Hispanic and Latino Affairs, Shelley Sali, about the commission's efforts during their meeting on December 7th. Sali says the city hosted conversations with the Latino community and heard their concerns over an increasingly hostile anti-immigrant environment.
With the current national political environment and shortly after the election, we recognize that many Latinos and a good deal of our Latinos in our community were very frightened. They were very stressed. It was impacting their work. It was impacting their health. So our first meeting that we had, we brought in Chief Dekoff. We brought in a deputy from the Sheriff's Department. We collaborated with Volunteers in Medicine and helped get about 36 Latinos were willing to come. It was very, very scary for them, and it took a lot of effort to get them to come to talk, to let us know what their fears were.
Salih says these conversations are helping the Latino community know what to expect while living in Bloomington.
One of the big things that came out of that, besides that they're afraid, they're frightened, they were afraid to go to work for a while, and they still have those fears that's truly impacting their life, but they're so frightened for their children, and this was a huge impact for them.
A subsequent Latino community conversation involved Monroe County Community School System.
From that, we got a lot of information about the bullying that was going on at the schools. It was an eye-opening experience for the school system. There were things that they didn't know were going on, not bullying just with children, but there were bullying with adults as well. I thought this was a wonderful meeting. Everybody came together. There was a lot of concern, and the school reacted right away. I know specific situations that were discussed on that evening were addressed, and they were addressed very quickly at the school. I was very happy to hear that.
Salih also reports Bloomington's Latino community is growing, specifically with immigrants from Venezuela.
And they are coming here. They're scared, they're new, they're trying to find jobs, they don't speak the language. So we had an event for them that we could help them meet people in the community, that we could connect them with different resources in the community.
Salih says community partners El Centro, the Center for Human Growth, UndocuHoosiers, and Volunteers in Medicine are providing information in Spanish to help immigrants connect with the Bloomington community. The Bloomington City Council appointed Julian Carrillo as a member of the Commission on Hispanic and Latino Affairs. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Michael Glab.
And I'm Jonah Chester. The City of Bloomington's Housing and Neighborhood Development is encouraging residents who may be interested in buying their first home classes throughout next year. As WFHB News Director Wes Martin finds out from HAND Director Dan Niederman, there's a wide variety of grant money and funds for first-time homebuyers.
Mr. Niederman, can you tell me a little bit more about these classes that are coming up? Is this an initiative that was sparked by the City of Bloomington?
Absolutely. So this class, Home Buyers Club, has been offered for many, many, many years. It's nothing new to the city or that the city's provided. It was developed through HAND being a HUD, Housing and Urban Development, with the federal government, a HUD-certified housing counseling agency. So anything related to housing, we're looking to try to assist folks. So whether it's purchasing a home all the way to trying to help somebody hold on to their investment through foreclosure intervention prevention, that's what we're trying to provide through the housing counseling. Also, we receive funds from HUD for community development and affordable housing, and the city has funding available to try to support somebody with a home purchase by providing down payment closing cost assistance. So we've joined together the education component with the opportunity for financial assistance with the purchase as well. So,
and what are some of the things that are taught during these classes? And it's my understanding that some of these homeowners can receive financial benefit for going to and taking one of these courses. Is that correct?
Absolutely, yeah. That's what I was trying to describe there, that we do offer down payment and closing cost assistance for folks who, for the first step is completing the home buyers class, and then, you know, there's some additional requirements to be eligible, such as falling under a certain income and the home being purchased has to be within the corporate city limits of Bloomington. But what to expect from the class, I mean, it's very comprehensive. We try to cover all the steps that one might encounter when they are buying a home for the first time, starting all the way at the starting point of is it even a good option for you? Are you financially in a position to be able to look at home ownership? Are you looking to move in the near future? So do you know, would continuing to rent be a better situation, or are you ready to take that step? So it starts with the very, very basics in the very beginning and then builds from there to also examine financially what it would take to buy a home. Credit is a very big topic and a big barrier that many folks run into when they start approaching the mortgage process. But then we dive into working with a realtor and what to expect there, home inspections. And it's not just one person up there talking the whole time. We've built partnerships with area professionals. So we bring in a realtor. We bring in a mortgage originator and a home inspector to share those different perspectives. So there's the chance to ask questions directly to, you know, the source that's providing that service in the home buying process. We also discuss how to, you know, opportunities to protect your investment. Once you've purchased the home, then you've got to maintain it and make sure that you have a plan of both savings and a maintenance plan moving forward.
So the city of Bloomington is offering this, but then there's also a certain financial incentives for first-time home buyers in the state of Indiana. Some of those, I think, well, if you could talk about those. My understanding of this is that some of those are income-based and some of them are income assistance for first-time home buyers. Could you talk a little bit more about some of the opportunities that people might not know about, at least coming from the state?
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely a topic that we discuss in the class, and well beyond just our local resource that the city provides for down payment closing costs. We also discuss other programs. And yes, you're correct. There's several programs offered by the state of Indiana through the Indiana Housing and Community Development Authority. Some of those have differing income levels that they look at, so it's a little bit different than our program. So there's more options there. There may be less assistance because they're reaching a broader target audience. But and then there's another program through what's called the Federal Home Loan Bank of Indianapolis, which offers works with member lenders. So a home buyer would need to work with a specific lender that works in coordination with the Federal Home Loan Bank, but they offer down payment closing cost assistance. They use the same income guidelines that provided by HUD that we use locally, but the difference there is that the funding they provide can be accessed for anywhere in the state of Indiana, whereas ours is just for properties located within the city limits. So, and then we dive into other programs, actual mortgage programs such as the USDA, United States Department of Agriculture, and also programs like Habitat for Humanity as well to make sure that folks have all that information.
I'm sorry, that just piqued my curiosity. The Department of Agriculture has a mortgage program?
Yeah, the USDA offers mortgages directly through their rural housing department. Or they work with lenders who are approved to offer USDA mortgages as well. So and the benefit of those are that you have to be in a USDA approved area, which is a good chunk of Indiana. There's a big box around Bloomington that's not eligible, but outside of that box is. The benefit that they offer is no required down payment. So it's a 100% loan that they offer.
Bloomington is often referred to as the most expensive housing market in the state, at least rental market consistently. But I think edging up in the housing market and housing prices as well. Are there certain challenges or are there certain opportunities that the city of Bloomington is offering potential first-time home buyers, particularly with regards to Bloomington's housing market? And could you describe some of that?
We definitely have a competitive market in the Bloomington area, and that's exactly why we offer the local program that we do for down payment and closing cost assistance, because that may just make the difference for somebody to be able to purchase a home closer to within the city limits, as opposed to having to go farther out where prices may fit their budget better. So that's exactly why we offer the down payment and closing assistance that we do.
Mr. Niederman, anything else that you think our listeners should know, or anything else about these classes which are coming up?
The classes are provided over two consecutive Saturdays, and you attend both Saturdays. And I will say that the class has been popular, and it does fill up. So if somebody's listening and is interested, I definitely recommend contacting HAND to sign up or with any questions.
Mr. Niederman, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir.
That was WFHB News Director Wes Martin speaking with Bloomington HAND Director Dan Niederman. Registration for January's first-time homebuyer courses has begun. Additional courses will take place in February, April, and September.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Support for WFHB also comes from Lauren Wood Builders. Lauren Wood Builders is a family-owned company that sources local materials and local craftsmen to minimize environmental impact and sustain community. More information available online at laurenwoodbuilders.com.
Now, it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Welcome to Activate, featuring tales of inspiration from local citizens who stand up for what they believe in and encouraging you to find your cause, live your passion, make a difference, volunteer.
Hi, my name is Keith Bobe. I'm a retired high school teacher, and I volunteer for the Community Kitchen, the Shalom Center, the Interfaith Winter Shelter, New Hope Family Shelter, and I just completed my first weekend of training for CASA. I'm trying to fill in, you know, this retired free time with some community service. It's working out very well. You know, what inspires me is the people, you know, and in the organization that have committed their time and energy to, in this community kitchen, to seeing that people who are hungry are fed, you know, at the Interfaith Winter Shelter, seeing that people who don't have a place at night have a place, a warm place to stay and some food. You know, at the New Hope Family Shelter, it's more about the families who just need a place to stay temporarily, and they're, you know, they're on their way to permanent housing somewhere, but, you know, there's a lot of kids involved, and then the kids need some daycare during the summer, which is what I was involved in. In CASA, there's such a need for people to represent children in the court system. Thought about CASA for 20 years, but I also thought I probably don't have the time until I retire. I guess it's opened my eyes just to see the need in the local community for all these services that are provided, and so many more services that are provided. I think it's obvious that the people of Bloomington care about the community, and there's so many services available. It's the government agencies, private agencies, quasi-governmental agencies, so that, you know, if you live in Bloomington, Monroe County, and you're in need, there's people and services out there that can help get you through until you're on your own. You can't have too many volunteers. You know, and then the nice thing about, I think, every organization that I'm involved in is the attitude, the personality of the volunteers and the staff. I mean, I just love working here because the staff, you know, they're lively, they play the music, and there's a lot of different activities that I could be involved in. This is my fifth year at the community kitchen, and there's always something to do. And as I get more experience here, they let me get more into the food prep, which is more fun, you know. And you know these people, some of them don't have a place to stay, you know, that particular night, and you're giving them a warm bed and a pillow and a blanket, and we often give them some soup. So you can see how you're helping these individual people. And I think the best example of that would be when families move on from the New Hope shelter, when at Shalom Center every once in a while, and at the Interfaith Winter Shelter as well, you hear somebody say, I got a job, or I got a place to stay. And it's interesting because the positive thing is when you don't see them anymore. You know, they don't need these services, and you know they made it, they're on their own, they got over the hump, that sort of thing. So that's when I think, you know, what I've been doing for them for the last year or two or whatever, got them over the hump, got them a place to shower and laundry and mail and a place to stay at night. And now they're back in the kind of a more of a member of society than they were before, you know, and they feel good about themselves and where they've been to where they've come. And I can see that. And they'll come in and, you know, they'll shake my hand and say, thanks for the help, and I won't see you again. Yeah, so that's a good thing. Thanks for listening. I'm Keith Bobe, and I work at many volunteer agencies in the community.
You may visit the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network website to see a full organization profile at bloomington.in.gov/volunteer. You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to build an empowered, vibrant, and engaged community. You may visit bloomington.in.gov/volunteer to find and sign up for local volunteer opportunities. All episodes of Activate are available online at wfhb.org/news/activate. For Bloomington Community Radio, I'm Jennifer Brooks.
News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Robert Goldkamp and Wes Martin, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Wes Martin.
Activate is produced by Lucy Shake from the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network. Our engineer is Wes Martin. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, I'm Jonah Chester.
And I'm Michael Glab. Stay tuned for Kiteline, a program amplifying the voices of those within Indiana's prison system. Coming up next on WFHB.